If you prefer manual, time-consuming processes, then this message isn't for you. But if you want to slash per loan cost and boost productivity, then exploring Indicom's Genius Suite is your next step. Integrate Genius into your operations or pair Genius with Indicom's expert mortgage services for proven ROI. Learn how to get Genius at work by visiting Indicom.com.
Hi, Housing News listeners. This is Alcina Lloyd, and I'm the producer of this weekly podcast, which is a proud member of the Industry Syndicate. Today, you'll be listening to Episode 7 of Season 4 of the Housing News Podcast. In today's episode, Robert Brokesmith, the president and CEO of the Mortgage Bankers Association, joins the Housing News Podcast to discuss the organization's regulatory priorities for 2021 and what goals it hopes to achieve under a Biden administration. During the interview, he also discusses what could happen if the Biden administration replaces Kathy Craninger, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But before we listen, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Now more than ever, homeowners and borrowers of the future need to understand impacts and options during times of financial hardship. Freddie Mac has made home possible for 50 years and is committed to providing assistance and clarity to the housing market. Through All for Home SM efforts, Freddie Mac Single Family is leading the future of housing through insights, education, mortgage, and business solutions. Learn more about resources to help you and the clients you serve at sf.freddiemac.com/affordable lending.
Thank you for listening, and here's the seventh episode of Season 4 of the Housing News Podcast.
Welcome, everyone. This is Sarah Wheeler, Editor-in-Chief at HousingWire, and I'm excited to have on Bob Brokesmith, President and CEO of the Mortgage Bankers Association, on our Housing News Podcast today. We're recording this in November, just after Joe Biden has been widely recognized as the winner of the presidential election, although not without some controversy. There are a lot of changes coming for the housing industry, and we felt like there was no better source to talk to about what this means for originators than you, Bob. So welcome to Housing News.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Bob, before we dive into the meat of this, we really always like to ask our guests here, how did you get into this industry? How did you start? There's not usually a clear path, and we love hearing all the different stories.
Well, that holds for me as well, Sarah. I'm an accidental mortgage banker. I graduated from college with a history degree and knew how to type. And in 1985, I took a job as a temporary worker while I was interviewing for what I thought might be a Wall Street job of some kind. And my second assignment was with the Money Store, which was a lender in New Jersey. And I started, you know, more or less in the mailroom. I was typing forms, and but quickly got exposure to the full every aspect of mortgage lending, and I went. After, 6 months or so as a temp, became a permanent employee, and then did what a lot of people do and follow their boss along when they get a different job, and took on roles of increasing responsibility, and here I am.
Amazing. It's not like you had the master plan at the beginning, huh?
I sure didn't. If you'd have said, what do you think about the mortgage banking field? I'd have said, huh?
Well, thank you, Bob. Now let's jump into some of those questions I have for you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, what is top for your members right now?
Well, given that we are still in the throes of the pandemic, we are continuing to advocate strongly for policies to provide relief to homeowners and renters during the pandemic. So whether that's rental assistance, because we believe an eviction moratorium doesn't really do the job, you still have to equip tenants to make that rent payment. Or whether it's some of the forbearance options and the ways for borrowers to exit forbearance. That's definitely one ongoing theme at MBA. More broadly, the housing market is doing great and playing a leading role in the economic recovery with, as you know, just really strong refinance and purchase activity with these record low rates helping millions of homeowners refinance and lower their monthly mortgage payments, or if they're sick of being on top of each other in the house, blowing out the kitchen and putting on a family room, getting a cash out refi. There's a lot of home improvement going on as well. which is providing consumers, of course, extra money each month during these challenging times. So we're focusing on the pandemic, both as it relates to needs of borrowers, but also the tremendous lending that has occurred despite all the challenges of the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, it is so interesting. At the start of this thing, it was kind of like, oh, what's going to happen to housing? You know, but unlike the Great Recession, right? I mean, housing is leading the way out of this and has just been such a bright spot in the economy.
Right. I mean, I say that housing is reasserting its rightful role in leading the nation out of recessions. The last one, housing obviously was a big part of the cause of the recession, which was unusual, and we hope that it won't happen again, and we trust that it won't. So we're really gratified to be really a bright spot in this economy.
Agreed. You know, looking to 2021, which is just around the corner, I mean, this has been a crazy year, but looking ahead, what are some of the legislative and regulatory priorities that you have at MBA for the next year?
One of the things that I've learned in my 2 years at MBA, and I guess knew a little bit on the periphery coming in, is that you don't just look at legislation, especially in a closely divided nation. You have to look at what's going on administratively too, because it's so hard to get meaningful legislation passed. So I, of course, will put on the perennial Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac resolution and reform. But that is really going to play out in the near term administratively as Director Calabria at FHFA figures out how much he can do in whatever time he has remaining. And while that's of interest on the Hill, I don't expect any legislation to happen anytime soon. So certainly the fate of the GSEs, as has been the case for 12 years, is high on our list. The regulation and oversight of independent mortgage bankers is also something we spend a lot of time on, and increasing minority home ownership and really trumpeting affordable housing initiatives is a big priority at MBA. And I guess the final thing I'll mention briefly is that we have engaged really closely on what will replace the QM patch, and have worked closely with the CFPB on that. As you know, that rulemaking is underway, and we hope, your question was about 2021. I sort of hope that gets wrapped up in the last month of 2020, but if it takes into 2021, of course, that'll continue to be a big priority for us.
Well, you know, when you consider all of those things, and there's a lot, you know, from your perspective, do those priorities become easier or harder to work on in a Biden administration?
Well, I'm not sure how much the change in the presidential administration will affect this, because we're fortunate to work in an industry that has broad bipartisan support. So, yes, there are different points of emphasis between a Republican administration and a Democratic one. And you do have this this unknown during the transition with particularly FHFA. And in addition to finalizing the capital rule, which we expect FHFA to do probably in December, the question is how much will they engage during the last 10 weeks or so of the Trump administration with the Treasury, where Secretary Mnuchin, his term, it will end, of course, in January. And the Treasury has to be involved in the resolution of Fannie and Freddie, both because they have to resolve how the taxpayers' stake in Fannie and Freddie will be determined and how the other shareholders will be treated, because you can't raise new capital until you resolve those issues. And also, very importantly, what form the government guarantee of Fannie and Freddie MBS will take post-conservatorship. So the PSPA now steers us to about a $250 billion backstop with the Treasury. But the key questions in a renegotiated PSPA include what will the cost be to the agencies for that guarantee? And will the guarantee be strong enough that investors in mortgage-backed securities will view post-conservatorship GSEs just as favorably as they do GSEs while they're in conservatorship? And getting that question right is critically important for the affordability of home financing in the U.S.
You know, and there's in their strategic goals that FHFA laid out for Fannie and Freddie that, you know, that exiting conservatorship was in there, but it was through 2024. You know, do you feel like that is going to be derailed at this point?
Well, I think there's a very good chance that it's accelerated significantly because of the election results. Director Calabria has made very clear from when he took office, probably from even before, because he probably talked about it in his confirmation hearings, that he saw the role of an FHFA director is to responsibly end the conservatorship. So he thought he had 5 years. He may still have 5 years. Of course, we're waiting for the Supreme Court to hear the oral arguments in the case about the constitutionality of the FHFA's structure, which is scheduled for, I believe, December 9th. And depending on how that decision goes, it could come down like the CFPB decision, where having a single head of the agency that was removable only for cause was found to be unconstitutional. But the cure for that was simply to make the director fireable at will by the president. So if that happens in the FHFA case as well, he may turn out to have less than 2 years as from the start of his term rather than five. And that may cause him to accelerate the exit. So that's really, I think, what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, super interesting. It's hard to see how he could get too much done between here and you know, if he was removed early in the Biden administration. But, you know, obviously all of those things are not things that we know right now. You know, you talked about the CFPB and their structure. You know, a Democratic administration usually means more regulation. And it's widely expected that Biden will replace the director of the CFPB, Kathy Kraninger, because of the very ruling that you talked about in the Supreme Court. What areas do you anticipate being a focus for regulators over the next year or two?
Well, I'd first like to say that we at MBA are very grateful for the tenure of Director Kraninger. We've worked very closely with her and think she's done a really good job at the Bureau. And if she is replaced by President Biden, which I tend to agree with you that he would be unlikely to keep her on for her full five-year term, we think that there are a lot of areas outside of mortgage lending that the CFPB will focus on. Because remember, that Bureau has a very wide scope. It's not just mortgages. And there were things that the current administration decided not to focus on that I think a Biden appointee would have more interest in, including student loan servicing, regulating debt collectors, and payday lending regulations. So I think there are things other than mortgages that will be on their list. As it comes to mortgages, I would expect that fair lending will be a primary focus, and also affordable housing. And those two, to some degree, go hand in hand, because if there are concerns about whether credit is equally available for people of more modest means and minorities, then that curtails the availability of affordable housing. So I think there are a lot of different flavors of fair housing and fair lending that will be on the Bureau's radar. I'm happy to say that unlike coming out of the Great Recession, where of course the mortgage industry had a big target on its back, and many would say deservedly so, this change in administration happens at a time where, until the pandemic, mortgage delinquencies were at decades-long lows, and where we have been manufacturing some of the highest quality, lowest risk mortgages in memory, and pursuant to the ability to repay requirements. So there's just not, in my view, a lot of things that are ripe for enforcement as it relates to mortgage origination.
Yeah, thanks for going over that. I do wonder, you know, as we get into more of the servicing part of, you know, as loans come out of forbearance and how that looks, it'll be interesting. You mentioned affordable housing, and Biden's ambitious housing agenda definitely has a focus on affordable housing. What part of that agenda aligns with the MBA's priorities?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to pick up on your point about servicing, and I think you're absolutely right. I think there will be a keen interest in how servicers have implemented the forbearance mandates and how effectively they go through the waterfall and get the right resolution for borrowers as they come out of forbearance, whether because the borrower's situation has improved or because the forbearance period expires. So that is definitely something that we'll keep our eyes on. In terms of the Biden affordable housing priorities, I'll again mention that we think rental assistance to borrowers is important for our members who are involved in the multifamily business. Of course, if your tenant can't pay the rent, then it's difficult for you to pay the mortgage. And having an eviction moratorium kicks the can down the road a little, but doesn't really get at the root, which is the borrower's inability to pay the rent. So we'll be engaged closely, of course, as the conversations between Leader McConnell and Speaker Pelosi proceed as it relates to some more coronavirus relief and stimulus. And we think that rental assistance should be a part of that. There were President Biden had a $15,000 first-time homebuyer tax credit. unless lightning strikes twice in Georgia and Republicans lose both runoffs, I think we'll have a divided government where a proposal like that probably won't get much traction. While we would be generally supportive of something like that, I don't think the chances are very high. And I guess the last thing I'd mention in this regard is continuing some work that we've done with the current administration to increase the supply of housing, both owner-occupied and rental housing, as a means of improving affordability. There are all kinds of impediments to producing affordable single-family housing and rental housing, and we think that efforts to remove some of those barriers should continue strongly during a Biden administration.
You know, one thing that the Trump administration rolled back many aspects of the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule, but Biden has said he will try to strengthen fair housing initiatives. And, you know, if you're a mortgage lender or servicer out there, how do you prepare for that change?
Well, I think in this case, Sarah, that it won't really be a perceptible change to our members because they are accustomed to complying with fair housing regulations and benchmarking themselves against their peers and really making a priority of excelling in that area. And the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule had some mandates or some requirements for municipalities and things like that. It was a little bit less on the strict fair lending activities of lenders. So I don't see that as being a particular challenge or change. Our lenders and servicers understand fair lending and fair housing rules. They've been complying with them, strong laws in that regard, for years, and they just have to be prepared to continue doing so.
You know, you talked about the two outstanding races in Georgia. You know, and you talked about what that might mean for the $15,000 proposed homebuyer tax credit. Are there other things that you think are probably going to be very difficult for him to get through, or are there things that you think, you know, there's some bipartisan agreement on?
Well, that's really going to be interesting to see play out. I think that given how close the election was, having a President Biden, who's an institutionalist and certainly not the most progressive candidate to compete in the Democratic primaries, having him prevail and having what I expect will be a Senate with a small Republican majority, it really gives the opportunity for collaboration. Of course, it also gives the opportunity for absolute gridlock, but I think that President-elect Biden, given his decades in the Senate, his history of making deals across the aisle, and the fact that, let's face it, he's not a young man. He's going to want to get some things done. I think he has a lot of friends in the Senate, and I think that there could be some bipartisan cooperation on some big items. Now, as that relates to specific parts of a housing strategy that a candidate Biden might have laid down, I think there are some of those issues like the one we spoke about probably won't get much traction. But I think that there is real opportunity to come together on issues where, let's just say, center-right and center-left Americans, which probably describes a lot of the country, would look to them to make progress on, and I think they can do it.
Yeah, interesting to think about his long relationships in the Senate and how those can be used at this point, and how that can be helpful to everyone as we try to get through some gridlock.
Right, and he was criticized, as you'll remember, for working closely with senators of quite different political persuasions to get things done. But I think that there's a real chance, and that Americans would welcome some bipartisan legislation.
You know, the MBA's weekly forbearance survey continues to show the number of loans in forbearance going down. It's, you know, you see a lot of people exiting. You do see just a small portion coming back in. But, you know, is there a trend there that you see in that data that gives you pause, or do you feel like it's mostly positive?
I would say it's almost entirely positive. We've seen drops in the percentage of loans in forbearance just week after week after week, and very low requests for new forbearance, so that we are, as of our most recent report, we are down to, 5.67%, I think, in terms of loans in forbearance, and with the numbers dropping every week. One interesting thing that we do have our eyes on as it relates to that number, the CARES Act said that lenders were eligible for up to 6 months of forbearance, and with an extension request, up to an additional 6 months. And it does seem as though there are borrowers exiting forbearance at the 6 month mark at levels that are higher than the weeks before and after. In other words, it looks like some people are being taken off of forbearance because the servicer has been unable to contact them and confirm that they're still suffering some sort of hardship related to the pandemic. So we do want to make sure that all borrowers understand the remedies available to them as it relates to forbearance. And in fact, we've just announced today an effort with some other trade associations and consumer groups, and with the blessing of the CFPB, to get the word out that it's imperative for you to contact your servicer so that you understand the options available to you, because we're really trying to counter this problem where if a borrower has been in forbearance for 6 months but is reluctant to engage with the servicer, that they can't get extended. And all it takes is a phone call. There's not any documentation required. It just needs to be a phone call where the borrower says to the servicer, I still have a hardship related to the pandemic, and I would like my forbearance extended. It's as simple as that. But if they don't do that, the servicer is not permitted to extend beyond 6 months. So that's something we're trying to really get the word out about.
Yeah, that's interesting that you can see that in the data, looking at, you know, why did they not just extend? Why did they get out and then go back in, right?
Yeah, and actually, to some degree, the going back in is positive if it's that borrower set. In other words, if somebody does go out of forbearance after 6 months, but in month 6.5 or 7 or shortly thereafter, there is contact made and they're put back in, it's not as simple as if they just stayed in, but it's sure better than the borrower refusing to interact with the servicer and then going down the delinquency path.
Yeah, great point. You know, so we have had an incredible year. Originators, right? I mean, I think the latest forecast for this year is $4 trillion in origination, which is obviously a record. What do you think origination looks like in 2021?
Well, first on 2020, it's really interesting how divergent the forecasts are. Here we sit on November 10th, and our official forecast is about 3.2, and I've seen others that are as high as you mentioned, as 4 trillion. So suffice it to say, it'll be in between there, but in either case, it'll be the most since 2003, which is quite astonishing, especially given where we were in March and April as the pandemic hit us so hard. In 2021, we are expecting almost $2.5 trillion. And you might say, gee, that's a lot less than 3.2 or 4, but it still would be the second highest total in the past 15 years. And the purchase component of that, we're pegging at just over 1.5 trillion. That would be the highest on record. We had 1.51 trillion in 2005. So we are looking at 2021 to be a really strong year, notwithstanding the fact that it'll be lower than 2020.
Yeah, it's hard to beat this year. That's still an amazing number. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you sharing your insights and really taking the time to answer some of my questions and give us some insight into what the MBA is looking forward to.
Really happy to do it, Sarah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Housing News Podcast. Please don't forget to give us feedback and rate us on iTunes. Also, make sure to check out HousingWire's latest podcast, The Daily Download, which is a daily wrap of HousingWire's hottest stories, now available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, and more. We'll see you next week.